The latest edition of the State of the River report is out, and again, it's a mixed bag. We'll tell you about it just ahead. Good Thursday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9, and make sure to get our podcast on iTunes or through our WJCT app. Just ahead, there's some good news and some bad news when it comes to the health of the St. John's River and some of the dangers it faces. What are your questions? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, UNF is teaming up with the Peace Corps. Yes, the Peace Corps. How students are setting their sights on service abroad. Plus, The Spectator checks in with some ideas for your calendar coming up this month. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, some troubling news is out and some good news about the health of the St. John's River. The 10th annual State of the River report is out this week. It's the annual analysis looking at the health of the St. John's River Basin, the lower basin, and it shows some areas of improvement when it comes to pollution in the waterway. But other indicators are worsening, and researchers from our two local major universities have a lot to share this morning. We're beginning the hour by taking a closer look at the State of the River report as we welcome Dr. Radha Piatti, professor of chemistry at the University of North Florida. Dr. Piatti, good morning.
Good morning.
Also joining us in studio, Dr. Jerry Pinto, associate research scientist at the Jacksonville University Marine Science Research Institute. Good to see you, Dr. Pinto.
Good to see you too, Melissa.
And what are your questions about the 10th Annual State of the River report as we speak with the researchers from both UNF and JU? We're already getting your calls. The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page. So this is the 10th annual report. Happy anniversary, first of all. Dr. Piatti, let's start with the good news. What's the positive in this document?
Thanks for having us today, Melissa.
Sure.
The State of the Lower St. John's River Basin Report is a collaboration between the University of North Florida, Jacksonville University, and Florida Southern College, supported by the Environmental Protection Board of the City of Jacksonville, and available to all the public and everybody at www.sjrreport.com. This year, as you said, we have a mixed bag, but in our 10th year, we've provided several 10-year summaries of these indicators. One of the important results that we've found this year is that total nitrogen levels and total phosphorus levels in the main stem and the tributaries are starting to fall. Nitrogen and phosphorus together are considered nutrient. Mm-hmm. Nutrient reduction has been a focus of a great deal of effort in the region, and it looks like over time, these levels are coming down.
Good news, Dr. Pinto, because that's what leads to the green monster, those algae blooms in the river that we see every summer, correct?
That's correct. And for the most part, these nutrients are food for the algae. And so, it's particularly in the summer when we have those hot temperatures and if we have a lot of rainfall, you know, this all contributes to algae blooms.
So we can hope to see less of that? Is that one potential outcome of this?
That hasn't materialized yet.
We're not seeing that yet. Why not?
We don't know the answer. Every year we do sort of an annual look at what's going on. Mm-hmm. When we look at chlorophyll A as a proxy for algal blooms, we don't see any reduction in that over time, any statistically significant reduction in chlorophyll A levels. So while total nitrogen and phosphorus, the source of this problem, is coming down, that hasn't been seen yet in algal blooms.
And so you said that there's been a lot of effort put into reducing nitrogen and phosphorus levels in the river, reducing pollution. What kinds of efforts are you starting to see finally pay off?
We tend to avoid drawing cause and effect relationships in our report. We want the public to see them. I will say that a lot of stakeholders have worked to bring down their mm-hmm. nitrogen and phosphorus discharges. One of them is our local utility.
The utility.
JEA. That's a big one.
The St. John's Riverkeeper has done a lot of public awareness work, tried to encourage people to reduce runoff, getting people to do things like change the fertilizer they use on their lawns, all kinds of efforts like that. Do you think around the margins things like that are making a difference?
I think certainly those efforts do make a difference. People tend to think that on an individual basis that they don't have that much impact. But when you put all those people together, it really does have an impact. And so, yeah, using this slow-release fertilizer and using it in the appropriate way, keeping it out of waterways or away from streams and rivers where it can flow into the main river, helps to prevent some of that nutrient load that prevents algae blooms from growing.
And we'll go to your calls about the State of the River report in just a minute. The number to join us is 549-2937. More news in this report, more concerns, including rising salinity, more water from the ocean seeping farther and farther upstream, correct?
Yeah, so salinity is something that's happening because of rising sea levels. It also happens in the rivers. It fluctuates a lot in the river because of tides on a daily basis. And then whenever we have storms or droughts, that affects the salinity profiles in the river. So as far as over the long term, we've seen increasing salinity. Anytime you dredge the river deeper, that allows more tidal forcing and saltwater intrusion. And then, of course, if you do things like withdraw fresh water from the river, that can also have an impact.
So if we see rising seas, if the port dredges the river, and we see water withdrawal down from Central Florida taking water out of the river from up here in North Florida, those three things all happening at once, big concern?
It potentially could be a big concern. I think that you also have to look at other things that can happen in addition to that, like back-to-back droughts, which would compound the problem even more. Yes, I think there will be an impact. Just how much of that will be from these individual events is hard to say.
Dr. Piatti.
I agree that all these factors put together are going to have an impact on salinity. And some of the issues that we cover in our report are biological impacts of increased salinity on populations of aquatic life. And so grass beds are an important element of that saline conditions can be very harmful to. And so there are a lot of impacts of salinity. We not only try to watch the salinity itself, but the impact of that in various kinds of aquatic life.
Okay, and if you're just tuning in, the 10th Annual State of the River report is out as researchers from UNF and JU release their findings on this. It's a mixed bag when they look at the health of the lower St. John's River Basin. What are your thoughts and comments and questions? 549-2937 to join us. Mark is on the west side this morning. Hey, Mark, good morning. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hello. I remember years ago with the Better Jacksonville Plan, they were talking a lot about how bad for the river's health having septic were. And so I kind of really thought that we had done away with that, but I'm making a new subdivision of about 10 houses within sight of a creek in my neighborhood, is all of a sudden got these old-style, drain field septic tanks like they were building in the 50s. And, what are we doing about that? Is there any push to get rid of those, or are they here to stay, or what?
Right. Yeah, thank you so much for that question. He's right. All over the area, there are still, and I know there is a push to phase them out, but still, so many homes on septic, and that is a big issue. What about that?
That's a very important issue, and I appreciate this caller's question. Certainly, a well-maintained septic tank doesn't pose a problem for introduction of fecal coliform bacteria and other waste bacteria into surface water. But Our city is filled with failing septic, and getting rid of those is a significant problem. It's a cost problem, and it's an infrastructure issue. We are not seeing a lot of improvement in fecal coliform in our report, and we've reported on that in a bit of a new way this year. The state is interested in the frequency of times in which a tributary's fecal coliform level exceeds the water quality criterion value of 400 colony-forming units per 100 milliliters. And so the number of times it exceeds this is what they're trying to bring down. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get it down to 10%. And none of the tributaries have 10% exceedances. Some of them, 90% of the data that they take exceed the water quality criterion. So this is absolutely still an issue. Some tribs are showing a little improvement. Some tribs are not.
And on JEA's website, I just found, as they talk about their septic tank phase-out program for Jacksonville, they are working on phasing them out in three neighborhoods: Biltmore, Beverly Hills, and Christobel. But of course, and they're spending $30 million to reduce septic tanks in those areas of town. But of course, I don't think those are the, and this is over a 5-year period, and these are areas of town that they've determined are polluting waterways, including the river and its major tributaries, tens of thousands of septic tanks that are all over the place, all over town. And this is a water and sewer infrastructure plan that is complex, that's going to take some time. How important do you think this is overall to improving the health of the river, what the utility is doing here?
I think it's very important. I think it's a difficult task to take on. I can't speak to the real nature of how this goes with the utility and neighborhoods and homeowners, but the tributaries being in this condition is a significant problem, potential mm-hmm. health problem. And people swim, fish, recreate in their neighborhood creek. And so it's important that they be clean.
549-2937. Vivian is in Riverside. Hey, Vivian, how are you? Vivian, good morning.
Hi, sorry. I didn't realize that they were putting me through.
Yep, go ahead.
I'm from Riverside. I was just wondering, you know, what the average citizen could do to, you know, on subject of septic tanks, what the average citizen could do to help, you know, reduce pollution in the river.
Sure. And everybody can do something, right?
Some of the things, this is a really good question as well. We really appreciate resident interest in their river, sort of. So thank you for your question, Vivian. Some of the things residents can do are picking up after your pet. That's a big one.
Right. Don't let your pet do their business and then not pick it up.
Right.
But if you take it and throw it in the trash, is that sufficient? Because then it goes into the landfill, right?
Yes, and I think then at least it's not so susceptible to runoff.
So at least you've done something. At least you've done something.
Yes.
Okay. What else?
In terms of fecal coliform, I think residents who have septic can work to maintain those. And I don't want to trivialize how difficult that can be, because I think in older neighborhoods, having a working, cleaned-out septic tank is probably not as easy as it sounds. Mm-hmm. But it is an important contribution.
Also, on the Riverkeeper's website, you can take the river-friendly pledge. I just looked this up. I just Googled this. Excessive nutrients, they say, from fertilizers can cause serious algal blooms harmful to aquatic vegetation, wildlife, and human health. Here are some things anyone can do. You can conserve water by fixing leaks and replacing old water-guzzling plumbing fixtures. You can conserve energy. You can get to know the river. You can report a polluter or a problem. You can choose fertilizer that is less toxic. There are fertilizers that are just less likely to cause algal blooms in the waterways. And if you go to their website, they can give you some guides on that front. And that website is stjohnsriverkeeper.org. And the River Report, by the way, is, can you say that website again?
www.sjrreport.com.
Let's go to Ray in downtown Jacksonville. Hey, Ray, how are you?
Hey, just wanted to comment. We've got over 90,000 septic tanks in Duval County alone, and the city's attempt to phase them out is commendable, but it's a small effort. Florida Department of Environmental Protection says it'll be over $250 million to get rid of the septic tanks in Florida. But you've got a legislature that's not willing to do anything about it. And a couple of years ago, even repealed the law that required inspection of septic tanks. So if people want to know what they can do, they can contact their legislators and ask them to, you know, at least require septic tank owners to have them inspected to see if they're operating properly.
I think that's an excellent point. You know, we've sort of reached a, I hate to say this, but a kind of a status quo, and we need to mobilize people to get on and talk to their legislators and public officials and try to get some more investment in improving the situation.
Have you, when you release this report every year, do you hear from the local delegation or the city council? Do you present it to them?
We actually have a page on our website, which is a tributary page, and on that page you can search by council district and planning district. And we've also made an extra effort in the last year to go and talk to these planning districts and advise them of what tributaries are in their area, what are the problems associated with them, and make them aware of some of these situations that they should be considering.
Let's go to David in Mandarin. Hello, David. Go ahead.
Hello. On your website, do you have or have the information for where the hot spots are, and how does the river come down to us? Is it originating, or how much is contributed in the counties above us? And second, do you see advertised the chemical to put in septic tanks to keep it healthy? Would that help with the fecal coliform? I know it's a gram-negative bacteria, but is there anything that can the resident can flush down and just help that consume itself before it gets out through the water table? Thank you very much.
Dr. Piatti.
You know, I don't know about the septic tank chemical itself, but I know there are a lot of reputable septic tank companies in town that can probably give a pretty good sort of analysis of what's out there to try to help yourself. And the suggestion that you've made is excellent, that maybe the heavy duty repair or heavy replacement can be mitigated by at least some self-cleaning measures that might be advised by a septic tank company.
And by the way, does Jacksonville, is it just me, or does Jacksonville seem to have a lot more septic tanks than in the year 2017 than other cities? You know, we're phasing them out, but we seem to be a little behind the curve. What do you guys think?
You know, to tell you the truth, I don't really know compared to other cities. We haven't really looked at that much. But Jacksonville has old infrastructure,
yeah.
And it's low. And these are things that have sort of been around since the early days.
Yeah.
And so we realize that we need to fix them or remove them for the most part. So, yeah, it's hard to answer that question.
All right. Some tweets and emails for our research scientists. From Lisa on Twitter, any effects from Hurricane Matthew that showed up in the study? Sewage spills, increased volume of freshwater runoff. No. Yes?
Well, any time we have, if you just look at this year, it's been an anomalous year.
Yes.
We started off with a tremendous drought early on. We had very low rainfall, a foot below normal. And then suddenly after July timeframe, we're seeing hurricanes. Irma dropped a lot of rain. So all those things affect runoff. And of course, whenever you have a heavy rainfall, even if it's from tropical storms, let alone hurricanes, you can get a lot of nutrients washing into the river, as well as other pollutants.
Kingsley tweets the show, what's the biggest threat for the river in the next 10 years?
That's a great question. I think, well, we're going to see a number of things happen. I mean, our fecal coliform problem is a big one that needs to be addressed. Salinity is going to increase. The level of the water is going to increase, so flooding might be an issue going forward more and more. So there are a number of things that can happen.
I think also that it's an interesting question that Kingsley tweeted. In terms of an emerging threat that's different from what we've reported on in the past, I think the issue of salinity is going to become ever more important and impactful to our aquatic life.
That's a big issue. We're getting emails about that too. So that's something that's really on your radar, it sounds like. Increased salinity due to rising oceans, what we're expecting to happen, a dredging project that's going to be bringing more water in due to deeper river bottom, and more strong storms will be bringing more water. That's a big issue. So that's going to mess with the vegetation along the riverbed. It's going to mess with wildlife. There's going to be a host of bad impacts due to that, right?
Yeah, and I think in addition to that, you can't discount the fact that when you have more saltwater intrusion, that could potentially affect our aquifer as well, which is our potable drinking supply.
A parade of horribles, in other words. That's not good news, guys. Unfortunately, you're not the bearer of long-term good news. People can learn more in the report, but what are your final thoughts about all this?
I would say that the many-year effort to work toward nutrients reduction is not over, but is showing some encouraging results. And that's important because that's taken a long time to get to come down. Yes, we still have algal blooms. Yes, we still have hot spot areas where nitrogen and phosphorus are high, temperatures are warm, it's shallow, and we still have blooms. But to me, that's an important takeaway this year, is that this effort to bring nutrient down is showing some encouraging results. But the salinity issue is going to emerge as a big one.
Okay, we'll watch that. In the meantime, look at the report online at SJR Report. It's the 10th Annual State of the River Report. She's Dr. Radha Piatti, Professor of Chemistry at UNF. Also with us, Dr. Jerry Pinto, Associate Research Scientist at JU's Marine Science Research Institute. Thanks for your insights.
Thank you very much.
Much more still ahead later. The Spectator with some ideas for a packed calendar this month. But up next, how students exploring the Peace Corps, yes, the Peace Corps, are preparing for service abroad. We'll be right back.
My mother was trying to clean the shadows off of the floor. That's how into cleaning she is. She believes that she can clean darkness. Do you understand me?
Join us for more True Stories Told Live. Next time, the endlessly fascinating world of family relations. That's the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
Hey, Car Talk fans, if you're wondering why Click and Clack aren't here, NPR is no longer distributing the best of Car Talk. The good news is you can continue to listen to the podcasts of the program at cartalk.com. We hope you enjoy WJCT's new weekend schedule. For more information about the new programs, visit wjct.org/weekends. WJCT and the Florida Theater present Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood live in King for a Day, Sunday, November 26th at 2 p.m. in the beautiful Florida Theater. Featuring dance numbers, new songs, surprise guests, and more. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
Welcome.
Welcome back. Well, it's a program that began way back in the Kennedy administration. More than half a century later, the Peace Corps is still going strong. And now the Peace Corps and UNF are launching a new partnership. It's called Peace Corps Prep, as students combine coursework with hands-on experience, building the skills they need to be strong Peace Corps volunteers or other intercultural field workers. Dr. Tim Robinson is Peace Corps Prep Advisor, and he's Director of International Affairs at UNF. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, UNF alum Frances Luna. She's a returned Peace Corps volunteer. Good morning, Frances.
Good morning.
Frances spent 2 years in Niger. I'm not sure whether to say Niger or Niger, West Africa. I was watching this movie on TV last night, Fair Game, and I saw Sean Penn call it Niger. So I don't know how to say it, but you were there.
Yeah.
So good to see you too.
Thank you.
All right, Tim, let's begin with you. It's amazing to think about the legacy of this program. It started in the Kennedy era when the nation was full of young people who were so idealistic about going out into the world and being of service. And here we are more than half a century later, and young people are still doing it. They're still part of the Peace Corps. Pretty cool.
Yes, Peace Corps just had their 50th anniversary activities. And last week I was in D.C. for Peace Corps Prep Coordinators workshop. And this program is very good. I think it shows that Peace Corps is looking to continue their outreach to university students. They've always had a good relationship, and just as Frances comes out of the university into the Peace Corps, this program intentionally looks to those students who are interested to help them prepare and get ready for their application and then selection into for their mm-hmm. service in the Peace Corps.
And so what's the partnership with UNF?
There are, as I understand it, about 90 different universities. We have 7 in Florida who have signed agreements with the Peace Corps to provide this program to students. So at the end of the program, students get a certificate, not from the university, but from Peace Corps itself. But mm-hmm. we commit to promoting this and working with students and signing off on their activities and the program itself.
And you're Director of International Affairs at UNF. This really sort of burnishes that program at the university, it sounds like.
Well, it's a nice addition. I mean, we have had some 80 UNF graduates, as Frances, who have gone into Peace Corps, and I think we've got about 8 or 9 out in service right now. So this, I think, will even increase that number, and it's a wonderful opportunity. From my perspective, we promote study abroad and internationalization for our students, and this is a perfect next step for students when they graduate to go into the Peace Corps. I've had a lot of friends, too, who have been in the Peace Corps in their professional careers, before their professional careers.
Frances Luna, you went into the Peace Corps. You spent 2 years in Niger, West Africa.
Correct.
What drew you to this?
So I've always been interested in global affairs and the international scene and learning about different cultures and language. So initially, that's what drew me to the Peace Corps joining. We had a recruiter come out to one of my third world politics class, and he was talking about his experience with the Peace Corps. And I said, oh, that sounds like something I wouldn't mind doing. So I completed the process, and then I was invited to Niger, West Africa, where I spent 2+ years working with the community there.
And what did you do there?
So I was a health volunteer, officially a community health volunteer. And so for 2 years, I did a needs assessment of my community. And based on those needs, I created projects that would be self-sustaining for them so that once I left, they could continue to do that.
Like what, building a water well, or what sort of things?
Yes, that was one of my projects. I wrote a grant to Rotary International because my village served as a point where people would get water. Unfortunately, the well that we had was in bad condition. So I found out the day that I was leaving the country that Rotary had approved that project. So the person that replaced me got to see that project through. Other projects included like a lot of presentations to the community about health issues, hygiene, malaria, HIV, those kind of things, school gardens so that they could purchase their own materials for school, those kind of things.
And you went to a very poor country.
Indeed, yes.
Spent 2 years there as mm-hmm. a volunteer.
Yeah.
How did that change you when you came back here to a very wealthy country. Did you see America with new eyes? What was that experience like for you?
Oh, most definitely. As I was telling Tim before this, going in, I was shocked just to see that level of poverty in that country. And then I was more so when I came back, because to me, it was just, this is the land of abundance. And there's just so much, and things are that are wasted on a daily basis, that I would every day compare, oh, I could be doing this with my people in my village and they wouldn't have any of those worries.
Yeah, we tell our kids that, you know, there are children overseas that would be very grateful for what you have, but until you see it, there's no way you can appreciate it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's take a quick call. It's Jeff in Mandarin. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm a 55-year-old guy married, and we're thinking in a couple of years after our daughter gets out of high school that we're going to join the Peace Corps.
Uh-huh.
Any opportunity for doing some prep work before that? I mean, my wife's a teacher. I was an engineer. I can teach math and science. We've got some skill sets, but we're probably not mentally prepared appropriately. So is there anything, opportunity that UNF's offering for prepping at that level rather than at the student level?
Dr. Robinson.
Well, that sounds very interesting. We don't have that. I'd be very glad to talk with you and to help you connect with the Peace Corps recruiter for our area. He's out of Atlanta. Excuse me. But I should say that there are special new Peace Corps application processes for people like you, and they have specific projects, for example. I can't remember the exact name of it, but the normal Peace Corps service that Francis went into, for example, is a 27-month commitment. But there are projects that people with skills such as yours can apply to and go in on a 3-6-month basis and do the project there. So I'd be very glad to meet you, like I said, on the phone or in person help you connect with our Peace Corps recruiter in the area.
It's called Peace Corps Response.
So can I get your contact information offline?
Sure. Let me put you on hold, Jeff, and we'll connect you, okay?
All right. Thank you, Dr. Robinson.
All right. Thanks so much to both of you. Dr. Tim Robinson, he's Peace Corps Prep Advisor, Director of International Affairs at UNF. And Francis Luna, UNF alum and return Peace Corps volunteer. Looks like you got a new recruit there, guys. Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you.
Well, the St. Simon's Food and Spirits Festival is happening this weekend on St. Simon's Island, Georgia. It had been postponed due to Hurricane Irma. I spoke about it with Patty Crosby of Hospice of the Golden Isles. Take a listen. Patty Crosby, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Melissa. It's great to be here.
Now, of course, you're known and loved throughout the community after many years on the air as an anchor at First Coast News. These days, you now work with Hospice of the Golden Isles, and they are the primary beneficiary of a really cool event, the St. Simon's Food and Spirits Festival, coming up this weekend on St. Simon's Island, Georgia. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I cannot wait for this event. It starts the 4th and it goes through the 8th. And the event on the 4th, by the way, is already sold out. So if you want to get tickets, you really need to start thinking about getting them now. How to do that, just go to ssifoodandspirits.com. This is our 6th year. And as you mentioned, this benefits Hospice of the Golden Isles. I'm now Vice President of Development. I'm also on the board for the festival. So we're very excited about this. We got a lot of great talent coming into the area and great venues for this year. We have some new events as well. I'll break them down for you if you want me to go through so people can understand. And it's not that far to drive from Jacksonville, so we're hoping a lot of people will come up and come to the St. Simon's area. So I mentioned the Wednesday event, the Southern Soul Beer and Bourbon event. That is sold out. The Thursday night event, which is the Firebox Pitmaster event, that's at Gascoigne Bluff. It's a beautiful venue under a canopy of live oaks. This is a Pitmaster competition. We have Pitmasters coming from all over, including Fox Brothers from Atlanta. They're the official barbecue for the Falcons. And Davis Love, he's a Pitmaster himself. He's going to be preparing, I believe, a short rib recipe.
Nice.
Yeah, and so we're happy to have him involved again. And then on Friday, we have Friday Night Flights and Bites. That's at the Golden Isles Aviation Hangar. There's going to be a live and silent auction Susie and the Bird Dogs will be performing. And Davis Love graciously has offered to bring some items from the President's Cup for us to auction off. So we're very happy about that. And then on Saturday is the feature event. It's called Tastings Under the Oaks. And that's at Gascoigne Bluff again. And this is a fantastic event. You can bring your kids. There's a family fun zone. And Melissa, I know you're going to come up for that. So we're excited to have you be part of it this year.
I am so excited to come up for that. I've never been to this particular festival. I've been to St. Simon's Island and Jekyll Island, and they're just amazing. But I'm excited to be part of this because this is a celebration of coastal cuisine.
Yes, it is. Right. And everything that's great about the coast, a lot of great flavors, and a lot of, you know, the different restaurants are participating in this. So you're going to sample some of their signature dishes and drinks. On Friday night, we also have the Coastal Stir Competition. So the local bartenders are mixologists, because, you know, it's a science to making these drinks, right? So they are going to be competing for the best drinks. We also have on Saturday, we have Chef Gennard Wells coming. You're going to see him, Melissa. He's a lot of fun. He is the chef of love from the Food Network. Jacksonville Magazine is also helping us out this year. They're sponsoring the Chef Showdown, so we're very happy that they're part of this. And then on Sunday, we wrap up the whole week at the Spiritual Brunch. It's at the King and Prince, a beautiful resort. It's gorgeous.
It really is.
Oh, I love that place.
Yeah, so what a weekend. This is a perfect way to, I think, after the trauma of going through Hurricane Irma and all of that, people have been through a lot. And this is a way for people to come together, enjoy the start of fall, and enjoy some great food, drinks, and just a party atmosphere, really.
Exactly. And to celebrate our community and come together. You know, so many people really suffered during Hurricane Irma, and many of the businesses, you know, they're trying to recover. You know, they had to shut down. Some of their own homes were affected by Hurricane Irma. And so this is a way for them to show off what they have to offer and to come together as a community, as I mentioned, for all of us to support each other and take time to appreciate all that we have and all that's great about the Golden Isles. And, you know, with our nonprofit, we had to evacuate. So we had some costs, too. And so this fundraiser is even more important to us because we incurred some extra costs that we weren't planning for with the evacuation. Thankfully, our hospice house was spared, but there are financial, you know, costs that come into play here, and you have to come up with the money. So we're very appreciative of the fact that the festival is going to be benefiting us.
Now, as I mentioned, for many years, you woke this community up with a smile.
Oh, thank you.
Anchoring the news on First Coast News. And, you know, when I first came to First Coast News and when I first met you, I'd always heard about that there were these women from Georgia who really epitomized the idea of they were just Georgia peaches, just sunny, happy, friendly, just loving and kind. And I always, from the first day I ever met you, I felt that that was the person you are.
Oh,
and
you are so sweet, Melissa.
I really
Thank
mean
you.
It. And so, you know, it was a loss for First Coast News when you moved on, but you moved on to Hospice of the Golden Isles in South Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And this hospice care that they provide is so, so important to the community.
It is. You're exactly right. I mean, considering, you know, what am I going to do after TV? I've always wanted to work for a nonprofit, and this opportunity came up, and I had already known about the great work of hospice, and in particular this hospice. If you've never had an experience with hospice, it's hard to explain just how amazing it is. You are cared for, you're given so much love and support through caring for your loved one. It's peace, it's comfort, and it's a wonderful gift. It's a gift to have that extra time, the quality time with your family. So even though it's a tough job, you know, for the nurses and everybody that's involved, but they do it because they have a passion for it. They know that they're helping people get the most out of every day that they have. So you focus mm-hmm. on that. You focus on the good things and try to remember that and appreciate everything that you have. And I work with some amazing people with Hospice of the Golden Isles.
That's right. And so when you buy a ticket to the St. Simon's Island Food and Spirits Festival, you're benefiting Hospice of the Golden Isles, and you're going to have a great time. Patty's going to be there.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to be there. A lot of really amazing people are coming. Get your tickets now at SSIFoodAndSpirits.com. I'm looking forward to this.
I can't wait to see you. You're going to have fun.
It's going to be fun. And more going on this weekend and this month to tell you about. That's in a moment.
Hey everyone, Chris Thiele here to announce that A Prairie Home Companion kicks off this very weekend live from the Palace Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota. What a start to the season we have with Chris Stapleton, Julian Baker, and the hilarious Lori Kilmartin, plus duets with Emily King and the best band in public radio, our birthday salute to musicians, our radio acting company, and I'm working on a brand new song of the week. We are so excited to be back. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name that we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
Exciting new changes are coming to your weekend. 89.9 WJCT has added Freakonomics Radio, Sunday afternoons at 1, followed by Planet Money and How I Built This at 2. For more information and to see the new weekend schedule, go to wjct.org/weekends.
Welcome back. Well, shopping locally has really evolved in Jacksonville over the last few years with the opening of new brick-and-mortar stores that carry local artisans and local products. There's a great event happening this weekend where you can support the Shop Local movement. It's called the Fall Makery, and it's happening at the Glass Factory. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Sarah Flowers and Tara Nilsson. They're co-founders of the Makery. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, Whitney Canny. She's the co-owner of Sailor's Siren in Neptune Beach, a local store. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Kimmy Cronus, owner of Fish Lips Paper Design. Good to see you too.
Hi.
All right. Let's talk about this. This is called the Fall Makery, and this is a way to celebrate the Shop Local movement. Tell us about it.
Basically, we are a platform where really makers creating goods can really show that to the community, and people that are enthusiastic about it can see a lot of items in one place.
Right. And now you had an event in the spring and you attracted hundreds of people. This is something that's happening all over the country. People want to support locally made products. Mm-hmm. This is exciting because it can be hard sometimes for local businesses to get a foothold. So it's exciting to see you bringing everybody together in one place to do this.
It is exciting. There's a lot of really great energy. People are really excited to be there presenting their goods and then also really enthusiastic about buying them.
And we're talking handmade, reclaimed, and vintage items too, new designs, all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
And curated.
Yes. So there's an application process. It's somewhat extended. It's sort of a long process, and we narrow it down to the best.
Yeah, only the everything that has been hand-selected.
Yes.
Okay, let's talk about some of the stuff that will be on hand, beginning with Sailor's Siren, your store in Neptune Beach. Whitney, tell us a little bit about Sailor's Siren.
So we are a store based in Neptune Beach in the Beaches Town Center that carries American-made, Southern-made, and locally-made. So we're not featured at the Makery, but that's where I go to do a lot of my shopping. So we try not to buy big box to support all the local artists. Things like the Makery really help me find products for the store. Mm-hmm. So I carry Kenny's brand, Fish Lips. We've carried that since we've opened. And, you know, we are another opportunity for people to shop items like the Makery all the time. So we are, we do lots of events with local artists, makers, and the Makery provides another opportunity for us to acquire new makers.
New items for your store. And as you said, Fish Lips is something you carry. Fish Lips Paper Design.
Yes.
Kimmy Cronus, you're the owner of Fish Lips. What a cute name for a store, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So your products will be featured this weekend.
Absolutely. I'm a fabric designer and paper designer, and I
make a line of handmade bags, different bikini bags, tote bags, that type of thing. And a lot of my designs are inspired by living here at the beach, in Southern culture. So it's been really fun to interact with local people and be able to provide them with products that speak to them and the things that they like.
How'd you come up with the name Fish Lips, by the way?
Oh, it's actually a great story.
I'm sure it is.
I'll tell the very quick version. When I was first dating my husband, who's a very serious Greek man, I said, "How much do you love me?" And he said, "I love you more than fish do this." And made a little Fish Lips motion. So Fish Lips became our term of endearment.
Aww.
That we would just sort of toss around, and it stuck.
It's the cute little stories like that that make locally owned businesses and products so endearing and special, and then what make a community special, you know? So this is why people need to come out and support this. And it's why when you go into a little store or boutique, you know, you feel that magic, you know, and you come out with a unique product that you don't get in a big box store.
Yeah, that's what we try to do at Sailor Siren. We're trying to make it about the experience. And it is. It's the sell of someone that's not going to go and buy something similar at, say, Target, that wants to come in and support local.
And nothing wrong with Target. I love Target.
Listen, we all have to buy toilet paper somewhere.
But this is special. So it is the Makery Fall Market, a curated market Saturday and Sunday at the Glass Factory. Now, if you've never been to the Glass Factory, that's a special experience, too.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful former factory, and it's on the western edge of downtown. I forget the address. Can you give the address quickly, guys?
It's 601 North Myrtle Avenue.
That's right. And this is Saturday, Sunday, 11 to 5 Saturday, 11 to 4 Sunday. Hopefully, we'll have beautiful weather. Come on out and check out locally made products at the Fall Makery and be part of this because there's such a burgeoning market for this here in Jacksonville, and I know you're going to have a lot of people come out. So ladies, thank you so much for sharing this with us. We really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
And finally, this hour, fall is in the air, and October is going to be a busy month because so many events were canceled last month due to Hurricane Irma. So they're back on this month. Get ready to mark your calendars. The Spectator is here. Woo! From Oktoberfest to the Florida Georgia Line to the Jacksonville Icemen, here she is now at the first Thursday of every month to take us all around town.
That is correct.
Here, what is your new nickname? As I saw in Folio Weekly.
You mean Magenta Minx?
You are the Magenta Minx, Carrie Speckman.
I think I would like to thank Claire. I think that's the work of Claire Goforth.
Yes, you are.
Shout out.
You are no longer, I saw, Jacksonville's favorite weirdo. I'm not sure whether to be happy or upset.
I was second place ahead of Corrine Brown.
Yes.
You've been dethroned.
I was dethroned
last year by that Lane Pittman, the guy that did that video. We played the guitar.
Oh, okay.
The hurricane or whatever.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm not that weird. I'm kooky, but I'm not a weirdo.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think.
I never saw you as weird. I saw you as just delightfully quirky.
Speaking of awards, congratulations on being a finalist for Hottest Celebrity.
You know, I have to say, you know, I said to myself, I'm not doing too bad for someone that just got her AARP card in the mail this week.
We're doing a high five right now.
What the heck, man?
50 power. 50 is a new 50.
Jesus Christ. Do they have to send it the second you get your birthday?
I got mine before.
Can they not wait a few years?
Wait for the single
I don't need 15% off at Denny's just yet.
UPS store. I got it. It was my first time I ever got it. I was so excited. I took a picture. The guy was like, "What is wrong with this lady?"
I could wait a few years for that card. You know what I mean?
I don't know. They have really good travel benefits. And they're right upstairs.
Yes, they are. The AARP office is upstairs. And Justine, the lady that runs
it.
She's wonderful. Okay, what's happening this month? Give me a few highlights.
This month. Okay, wait. I just lost my...
This weekend, okay. It's Florida Oktoberfest at Metro Park.
Or the space formerly known as Metro Park,
yes.
Whatever it is. It's 3 days. They have music, beer, lots of stuff. First day, it's tribute bands. They have Journey and I think it's the Eagles. Then it's alternative, and then it's country. But they're going to have food trucks, beer, a Ferris wheel. Because what Oktoberfest would be complete without a Ferris wheel? Night of the Library, their big gala is on Saturday.
That's Saturday night.
To raise money for Learn to Read. And then next week, Illegally Yours, remember that film that was in?
Oh, with Rob Lowe?
Yes, they shot all in St. Augustine.
Right.
They're showing it at the amphitheater.
At the amphitheater.
Super cool. And they're going to have a lot of people who were extras and
oh, that's
who
cute.
Worked on it. Who can, yeah. And they're going to have a best 80s attire contest. On the 12th, the Florida-Georgia line. But wait. You know who's touring with them? Nelly.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Florida Georgia Line is touring with Nelly?
Yes.
Worlds have collided.
Worlds
big
have
time.
Collided up in her.
Up in
as,
her.
As Nelly would say. Yes.
So they're where are they? At the arena?
Yes.
Nice.
That is on the 12th. Next weekend is Beaches Oktoberfest. 3 days. Oktoberfest is getting out of control.
Yeah, Oktoberfest has come to town in a big way.
Yeah, so that's at the Seawalk Pavilion. It's very kid-friendly.
Okay, and then we're getting a little tight on time. Let's just hit the highlights here.
Okay, the
Spectator.
Jacksonville Icemen are playing their first game ever.
That's exciting.
Why do I sound like a robot?
It's hockey coming to town. The Icemen versus the Orlando Polar Bears, Saturday, October 14th. That'll be fun.
Yes, that's a family friendly. TEDx was always a big event.
TEDx Saturday,
also
October 14th.
As far as I know, they still have tickets, but you may want to check because I think it sells out every year.
And then, as I look through your list, real quick. Neil deGrasse Tyson on the 17th at Florida Theater. And then, of course, Florida Georgia Weekend at the end of the month. Yeah. And more on Carrie's website. Go to thespectator.com.
And may I just add a personal shameless plug? I'll be hosting trivia every Monday at 7:30 at European Street in Riverside.
Go see her. That's our show. I'm Melissa Ross, and 1A's up next. Have a great day, everybody.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.